Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, and my goal is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a healthy, loving relationship that lasts. So call in, share your dating and relationship stories, ask the questions that keep you awake at night, and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategies.
Hello, everybody. This is Nina Atwood. I'm your host, live this time. And if you're joining us for the first time, welcome back. I'm so glad to have you here. If this is your first time, well, I hope you really enjoy the show. I've got some really, really great, relevant information for you about today's love relationships. And if you're like 98% of us running around out there, you are either looking for a relationship or you're in a relationship or you would like to be in a relationship. So on this show, the new so-called dating trend is stay-over relationships. Now, is that really slowing the road to marriage for couples? Is it a positive trend or not so much? I'm going to give you an overview on a new piece of research about relationships and what our trend is about that and what it means for today's dating relationships and for the future of marriage itself. Interesting stuff. Also on this show, how we shoot ourselves in the foot in committed relationships, especially in new relationships. So you've met somebody wonderful and you may feel right now that you've found a soulmate, but Steve Stosny tells us that you might be setting yourself up for a breakup. So I'm going to give you some of Steve's best tips on how to avoid shooting yourself in the foot in a new relationship. But first, let's go back to this whole idea of the stay-over relationship. So there's a study that was done at the University of Missouri in Columbia with dating couples. And what the study revealed is that as an alternative to fully cohabitating, couples are spending three or more nights together a week and still maintaining their own homes. And they think that's linked to the recent census data that we've gotten in this country that indicates people are getting married later. And they dubbed it the stay-over relationship, which basically means you keep your own homes and you get together three or four nights a week and spend the night at one home or the other. But you don't move in together. You don't even move most of your stuff in. You keep your stuff in your separate houses, and you keep your bank accounts separate. And if you have children, you, for the most part, keep those separate as well, although I suppose that could vary with different couples. So the idea is that instead of just going from dating to courtship to marriage, a lot of people today are choosing to say, no, and you know what? What's the benefit of that? Why do we need to rush into marriage? So they're spending this time prolonging the dating path in a way by doing these stay-over relationships. So what the research says is that, and this, by the way, was based on college-educated adults in committed relationships. So we're not talking about all the way across the spectrum. We're talking about college-educated people, which makes sense because, generally speaking, it's not always the case, but generally speaking, the more educated you are, the more the greater your financial independence. And so maybe there's less economic push to move in together, and, you know, because often you hear couples saying, well, maybe we should move in together because it would save us a lot of money. Of course, that's not really a good reason to move in together. You need a better reason than that. But given that that is sometimes a consideration, I think that these are probably the couples that they interviewed are probably people who can financially afford to maintain two homes while they prolong that path to marriage. So why do they do it? Well, what they said in the study was that they liked having control over the pace of the relationship and over their possessions. You know, I want to keep my stuff separate. I want to keep my bank account separate. I don't want to have to be exposed that way to you yet. I don't know you well enough to do that. It was kind of the idea of it. So that's interesting that that would be a reason why people would want to prolong the dating process and not move in right away. But is that really a new idea? You know, the idea of couples dating and spending the night at each other's homes. I don't think that's a new idea. I know it's not. It's been around for decades. They're calling it the stay-over relationship as if it were something new. I don't think it's new. It might be that it's becoming more of a trend, that it might be become that it's becoming more popular. Here's what I took away from this study and what you can take away from it. You got me think, well, what the heck does this have to do with me? I think the first thing is just realizing, well, it's not really anything new. This has been around for a long time. But if more couples are deciding to do these stay-over relationships instead of rushing into marriage, I'm all for that. I'm all for that because I would rather see people slowing down on the path to marriage than rushing into it. And if this is one way that couples can take a longer period of time to really get to know one another, and I think they have that opportunity by doing this, you know, to really spend more time understanding each other better, more likely to come out of this kind of relationship than rushing into marriage. And I'd like to see that because there's been such a tremendous trend in the last few years of people rushing into relationships and rushing into marriages, and it's become very popular. And if you watch a lot of reality television, that's what you see all of your favorite stars doing, movie stars, television, etc. So I think that it is not a bad sign for marriage. I think that it might actually be a positive trend in that way. But there is a downside. There's a little bit of a downside. And the downside is that you could get so comfortable with your stay-over relationship that you don't ever progress into marriage and making that commitment. And there's no question that marriage is a deeper and greater level of commitment for most people, not for everyone. But for most people, it's a deeper level of commitment. You're more likely to work out your issues and your problems in a marriage and inside of the context of that commitment typically than you are in the context of dating someone or, in this case, dating and staying over. Not the same level of commitment. And I firmly believe that to truly have a good, long-term, committed relationship, you have to grow up a lot. When you combine your home, all your stuff, and you combine your bank accounts, now you got to work things out. You have to work out how to live together. You have to work out how to share your stuff and how to manage your money. You have to get aligned and get on the same page. And that requires a lot of maturity. Let's call it that, growing up. So the one downside to stay-over relationships is maybe you're not going to be quite as mature. Maybe you're not going to be quite, you know, not have the same opportunity to grow up. If you prolong it, and I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to do it. I'm saying that if this stretches out for years and years and you maintain this mentality of living separate, then it wouldn't afford you the same opportunity that getting married and moving fully in together might give you in life. All right, so that is the stay-over relationship. Interesting stuff coming out of that little study on that phenomenon. But I also promised you in this show to talk about how you might be shooting yourself in the foot in a new relationship and what you can do about it. So Steve Stosny is a best-selling author and relationship therapist, and he has a very empowering message. I pulled one of his articles from Psychology Today that I want to talk about in this show. And here's what it's about. Now, first of all, no one argues against this fact. It's incredibly challenging in today's world to find and maintain a good, loving, healthy relationship. Well, Steve's article, the one that I'm going to talk about today, sheds a lot of light on where some of those challenges come from. That's what we're going to talk about next. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 dating traps you must avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
Okay, who hasn't been here? Picture this, a couple in love in the early stages of a relationship, and it's wonderful. A blissful union of two people who practically finish each other's sentences, who can't keep their hands off of one another, always holding hands, kissing, hugging, and whose friends and family are mainly just kind of rolling their eyes, thinking, why don't you get a room? But deep down, we all love the notion of being in love. And truthfully, we love couples in love. But what's wrong with this picture? Well, Steve Stosny has a different take on this early stage of blissful love, and so do I. First of all, Steve says that initially we fall in love from the wrong part of the brain. He calls it the toddler brain. And that, of course, comes from the earliest part of our lives when we're just little kids. And he calls it this great human contradiction, which shows up when you're a toddler. And, of course, those of you who have children or who have raised children know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's this constant battle with toddlers between the competing desires for autonomy and connection. So if you picture the average toddler, she says no about 100 times a day. She says mine. She's possessive of her things. And she refuses to be controlled. Then, just when you think you can't stand the terrible twos anymore, then 30 minutes later, she crawls into your lap wanting to be held and comforted because she fell down. She wants autonomy. She wants connection. She wants both. But you can't have both autonomy and connection at the same time, all the time. So when you're raising a toddler, that means you're going to be pushed and pulled by the nature of being that age many, many times throughout the day, which is why it's so very challenging when your children are little. You know, we understand it in toddlers. They do grow out of it. At least they grow out of it in terms of cycling up and down with this contradiction multiple times per day. But what about adults? Do we really understand it or recognize it when it shows up in adulthood? Well, one place it really shows up, that whole dynamic of wanting autonomy but wanting connection and battling over it within yourself and in a relationship, shows up again in love relationships. So when you're first falling in love with someone, the same thing might be played out. The paradox. I want autonomy. I want connection. And if you're not aware of it, and if you're not careful about it, it can really wreak havoc on your relationship. So it starts with what Steve calls toddler illusion number one, which is the illusion of sameness. So initially, if you're coming from the toddler brain in love, it seems as though you feel and think alike on everything. And the illusion is that your partner perceives events and behaviors exactly the same way you do. For instance, and this is embarrassing to admit, but my husband and I have, I admit, had arguments over the fact that I like to clean up the kitchen as I go. I don't leave messes behind me when I cook or prepare food. That's because it really bugs me to have a messy kitchen. He, on the other hand, can go hours without cleaning up his messes. He doesn't understand why I feel so out of sorts over the mess, and I don't get how he can be so calm about it. So the illusion of sameness causes us to argue over this ridiculous issue. But the reality is that we don't perceive it the same way. It doesn't bother him for the kitchen to be messy for a long period of time. It really bothers me. So Stosny says, having different perceptions about the same thing is normal. That's human beings. We see things differently. But the other problem in the illusion of sameness is empathy. Now, what is empathy? Empathy is the ability to understand and have compassion for someone else's feelings. Real empathy, true empathy, means that you can understand the other person's feelings even if they are vastly different than yours. But the toddler brain wants to diminish differences. It doesn't like it if you feel differently. So the toddler brain acts this way. When your partner expresses something that really differs from your worldview, you tend to feel shocked and then try to suppress it. Empathy goes away in favor of trying to keep this illusion of sameness alive. I don't want to hear what you have to say. I don't want to know that you perceive things differently, because that then ruins my illusion that you and I are so much alike. So here's something you might want to try. The next time your partner says something that you don't agree with, try suppressing those feelings of discomfort that you're having about it in favor of being curious. Go into a state of curiosity. Instead of reacting, try asking questions, open-ended questions, to endeavor to understand him better. It's amazing how well it works in my marriage when we allow those differences in thought and perception. So another problem with the illusion of sameness is that your relationship will evolve over time. Early on, you experience a lot of this feeling of being a lot alike. Well, we think and feel so much alike about so many different things. But somewhere along the way, especially in marriage, along about the second year of marriage, couples typically begin to uncover lots of differences. And that's where the trouble begins. If you're not careful, you spend your time in escalating arguments that all come from the fact that you feel disillusioned. This person you thought was so much like you is in reality so different. Or maybe you were aware of your differences when you were dating, and in fact you found those differences very attractive. For instance, maybe he's really outgoing while you're more shy, and you found that very appealing while you were dating. But then after marriage and a couple of years down the road, it becomes a huge issue. All he wants to do is go out and socialize while I just want to curl up with a good book. But real love is about acceptance. It's not about trying to bend someone and shape someone into being the person you want them to be. So that brings us to toddler love illusion number two, which I'm going to share with you in just a moment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. we're back with more from Steve Stosny. Stosny says that when we love from the wrong part of the brain, we suffer from toddler illusion number two, which is the idea that we know how to make intimate relationships work. That's the illusion. You might recognize this in yourself. I know how to do this thing. I know how to do this intimacy thing. And so especially in today's self-help world, we tend to believe that we know all about intimacy. Women are especially vulnerable to this because we tend to be better at relationships overall. We tend to form more and deeper friendships than most men do, tend to be closer in our family of origins and that sort of thing. So that leads often to us making the mistake of expecting our boyfriends and husbands to act the way girlfriends do. Huge mistake, because his emotional makeup is not the same. Men in general do not respond in relationships the same way women do, and quite frankly, they just don't act like our girlfriends, which is actually something that's very wonderful, because there are certain things about a man that would not be something that you would find in a girlfriend. But what if we are seeking greater intimacy in our relationships, we sometimes think, well, I have the lock on this. I know how to do this, and you as the guy need to pay attention to me and learn from me because I will teach you how to do it right. But what we're really trying to do, which is probably not the right thing to do, is we're trying to teach them to be like our girlfriends rather than respecting differences and allowing them to be who they are, and then intimacy being more about intimacy. See, meaning that I'm going to allow you to be who you are and see who you are. But I think a lot of the problem is confusing equality with sameness, because we know that we are equal to the men in our lives in the sense that no one is superior. No one person in any relationship should have more power, significantly more power over the other person in any real sense due to their gender. And there are still vast parts of the world where women are not perceived as equal. But in Western cultures, we do see ourselves that way. But equality, being equal does not mean being the same. You know, a couple of decades ago, John Gray wrote and published a book about gender differences, and he was one of the first to truly highlight the issues of modern relationships around this notion, because we are equal, we must be the same. And so he wrote the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And in that book, Dr. Gray made the argument that we actually function better in long-term relationships when we recognize and acknowledge our differences and we don't try to change them. It doesn't matter if you frame that as a gender difference or if you frame it as, well, we are just so different. What counts is that you can recognize and acknowledge the differences that you have from your mate and that it's okay. So once we give up the idea that we know how to make relationships work, that we somehow are endowed with some secret knowledge, then we can be much more creative with our mates in solving the issues that trouble us. You know, the truth about understanding intimate relationships is we're not really biologically wired for intimacy. We're biologically wired for survival. And if you go back 150 years and then you look back, going back for centuries before that, what you see is that up until the last 100 years or so, mainly people married one another for survival reasons. And in large parts of the world, that's still the case. It's in Western culture that we've invented this idea that you need to be in love with the person you marry. But prior to that and outside our culture, men and women married for survival. Intimacy was not really the thing that they were seeking. What they were seeking was comfort, and they were seeking someone with whom to have children and someone that they could feel safe enough with to live their lives with, take care of business, if you will, family business, the business of the farm or the business of the whatever it was that they were trying to accomplish in their lives. But it wasn't so much about intimacy. And the truth is that intimacy is a little scary. Intimacy kind of opens up the part of our brains where fight or flight lives. And sometimes the more intimate we get in a relationship, and I'm talking about emotional intimacy here, the more we reveal ourselves and become open to someone in our lives, sometimes the more quickly the fearful part of our brains can be activated if something goes wrong, or if we perceive something to be going wrong, if we perceive that there might be some risk that that person doesn't love us the same way we do them, or that they might leave. So in a way, intimacy works against the way we're wired biologically. So what all that means, and I know I'm giving you this in longhand, let me give it to you in shorthand. The bottom line is we really have a lot to learn about intimacy and how it works. And one of the best ways to learn it is to be vitally interested in who your partner really is. Not who you need them to be, but who they really are. And make that your focus. So the bottom line from Stosny's work is that we have to get past this toddler love, this very immature way of loving, in order to have a relationship that lasts over time. That means giving up the idea of being so much alike and embracing the idea that we are different, and that is not only okay, but in fact is a very good thing. Sometimes the ways that you are different from your partner afford you an opportunity to grow, meaning that some quality in your mate that you don't have might be something that you would like to develop a little bit more of, and vice versa. And so when you really love each other, appreciating your differences, and you really see those differences, then sometimes it opens the door for you to say, hey, you know what, you're more adventurous than me, and I'm less adventurous. I'd like to be a little more adventurous. I'd like you to pull me a little bit your way, and I'm going to give you permission to do that because I love you and I trust you and I know you love and trust me. And let's, you know, would you pull me a little bit that way? So it can really afford an opportunity to grow. And how does this translate into dating? When you're first meeting someone, you haven't yet chosen if you're going to get involved or get committed. I think in dating, the real trick is to find someone with whom you share those basic fundamental values, because you have to have those in place. You can't appreciate your partner's differences if you don't share fundamental values, the big things about life. So the trick in dating is to find someone that you share those basic life values with, but who is his or her own separate person, somebody who's not like you necessarily. And then to be the person you are meant to be all of who you are when you are dating. Do your best to break down the illusions rather than build them up. Get to the place of being authentic and real just as quickly as you can in the process. And even if it's a little bit uncomfortable, I promise it will pay huge dividends down the road, because you will then be able to achieve real intimacy, the kind that is into me see. And that's where you find the real golden relationships. Being real in dating does not mean that you give up courtship in favor of walking around in your underwear for 3 days with 3 days beard growth and burping while slurping your beer. Okay, I picked on the guys a little bit there. Being real is about being you, but I hope you're being your best you. So if you're a guy, be a gentleman. Open doors. Ask her out in advance. Bring flowers. But be ready to do those things for the rest of your life. It should not just be about dating, the early days of dating and putting your best foot forward. It should be about how to treat a good woman right. And women, take care of yourself. You know, exercise, eat right, clean up your finances. That goes for men and women. Have a good career. Be on your path in life. Be your best self, not a helpless little girl who's waiting for a big, strong guy to come along and rescue her. And plan on always being that emotionally strong woman who is still able to let a guy be helpful in her life. Don't be so strong that there's no room for a guy to be helpful. Men like to be helpful. But here's the bottom line. Two loving, strong people who are willing to be totally real, who have open hearts, who share the same values, and who appreciate their differences, have the highest probability of a wonderful, lasting, committed love relationship. So get out there. Make it a terrific life. And now stay tuned for a moment longer.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more love strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.